Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. It's the power of ideas, right? And they're very powerful when you act on them. The next generation is called to act on ideas that perhaps, I don't know if they fully understand. Which way are we walking this out? I think that's an important topic to talk about here. Is we look back at the events, Charlie Kirk's assassination, but Turning Point USA continuing on with that call. In Montana yesterday, it was a message of liberty and common sense conservatism, but also faith, too. Going to speak with Montana Governor Greg Gianforte, who was an early associate and friends with Charlie Kirk and spoke at that event yesterday at Montana State University Bozeman. A bit later on, Congressman Troy Downing will join us as well. We'll talk about why engaging young people matters now more than ever. Today on Voices of Montana, Montana Governor Greg Gianforte joins us for a few minutes. Troy Downing, Congressman from the Eastern District, a bit later on. Governor Gianforte, how are you, sir?
Hey, Tom. Good to be with you.
Thank you for coming on the program. I hope you're well. I know it was probably a difficult time. It's been difficult since September 10th to kind of understand, I think, maybe a path forward in one way. And then the culture of our nation when it comes to maybe to acceptance of some of this political violence. But I want to ask you what you're going through, what your message is. You and Charlie had been associates and friends for some time now, and I know that you're a public servant and you hold yourself very well, but it probably had to have I know it had an impact on you, Greg. What can you share with us?
Well, Charlie was a friend. We Susan and I met him 13 years ago. He was 18, and we were so impressed with this young man that I said to Susan, we have to. His message was simple. It was faith, freedom, and love of country. And he went places where he wasn't welcome. He brought truth. He engaged in civil discourse, respectful dialogue. And so we said, we have to support him. And I gave him a little check. And a number of years later, he loved Montana. He came here many times. He's been to our home many times in Bozeman. He told me that check that we gave him back when he was 18 was the second check he ever received. He hadn't even really even set up Turning Point yet. He was just getting going. So we developed a dear relationship with him over the years. And so it's bittersweet. We've lost a young man of faith, of character, who was making a huge difference. But one of the things I spoke about last night is that Scripture promises that all things will work together for good for those that love God and are called according to his purposes. And you know, before his assassination, there were 3,300 chapters of Turning Point on high schools and college campuses. They've had over 120,000 applications for chapters since his assassination. So God uses all things, even tragic, evil things, for his glory and our good. And it was incredible to be there last night. They had to turn 300 people away. It was standing room only to not only honor the life and work of Charlie Kirk, but also to chart a course going forward. And that's really what I focused on. How could we honor Charlie and the work that he did while he was here on this earth?
I appreciate that. What would you say is a path forward?
Well, I mentioned four things, and I used a lot of Charlie's words in my comments because I think you want to honor someone, you want to know what they said and did. And Charlie said his what, when asked what he wanted to be remembered for, he said, it's my faith. I want to be remembered for my faith in God. So that was my first charge to these young people, is pursue God and find someone who knows Jesus and spend time with them, ask the hard questions, seek truth. That's the first way we can do it. The second, and this is kind of interesting, Charlie never went to college, but he was probably better educated than most college graduates. And I shared a little bit. I'm kind of a, you know this, I'm a engineer geek. You know, I never had a lot of civics and other education because I was, my nose was in the math books and things. But I've had a renaissance in my own life. I got just a spiral bound notebook about 20 years ago. I keep it in my bedroom. And every time I finish a book, I write down the date, the title, and the author. And I push myself to read about 50 books a year, almost exclusively nonfiction. Because I think if you want to chart a course for the future, you have to understand what happened in the past. Because history repeats itself. And that's what Charlie did. He pushed himself to study history, economics, philosophy, theology. So that was my second charge. And then third, again, using his words, you want to have a fulfilling life, fall in love, marry that person, and raise a family. Mm-hmm. It's a hard path. Susan and I have been married 37 years. We've raised our kids here in Bozeman. Charlie had a loving wife and beautiful children, and that was really the center of his life. And then finally, and this is probably, once you've done those other things, this is probably the most important thing, and that is you need to love your neighbor. Jesus said, love your enemies. Pray for the people that persecute you. And we need to have dialogue even with people we disagree with. We need to move away from violence towards reconciliation. And that was really the bottom line. Charlie did that. He went to places he wasn't welcome. He engaged in respectful dialogue. And our country is a better place because of the work he did.
Boy, and he did it with such, you know, in my mind, precision in a lot of ways, and grace too. What Governor Greg Gianforte is with us here again, fresh off of this event yesterday, Montana State University. This is the Turning Point Tour now. It was previously the American Comeback, but with Charlie's death, and then a resurgence here in interest in this. Governor, how do we continue to gauge young people? I think it's important that we, you know, and what Charlie did too was just boldly, but like you said, pretty simply, faith, freedom, love of country, defended those principles and taught those principles. And in my mind, I went through that journey from young liberal to more seasoned conservative because I took time to understand those principles. How do we engage our youth in America like Charlie did? Because he made a dent.
Yeah, and I met with a bunch of the Turning Point USA Bobcats last night before the event, just having a dialogue. And, you know, it gave me hope in our country. I would say if you're a high school student or a college student, go attend a Turning Point event. If you don't have a chapter, maybe you should start one. But again, start where Charlie started. His faith was the most important thing. Erica, in her first, Charlie's widow, in her first address to the nation, said, you know, if you don't know what all this means, find a Bible-believing church and start attending on a regular basis. You got to build the house on the rock, and the faith is the rock. And then as you kind of renew yourself through the salvation that the gospel offers, you're in a better position to reach out and love the people around you. And the other message I delivered last night is what we can't do is retreat into the dark corners of social media. Spencer Cox, governor of Utah, said it really well. He said, turn off, go out, touch grass, hug a friend, spend time with family, serve your neighbors. Those are the real things in life, not the stuff online. Charlie gave us a great example. He turned off his phone every Sunday, didn't even turn it on. No social media, no phone calls. And I think we could all benefit from just putting down our phone a little more often.
I like that. I appreciate that as well. And I think, you know, we encouraged our younger generations to, you know, pick up the phone or spend some time, be proficient in technology. And that meant a lot of screen time. But I think we're seeing some pullback in those younger generations now on their own, recognizing that there's a lot of life to live out there. I want to ask that question in terms of, you know, these ideas that we're talking about and the power of ideas. We have a lot more, I think, ideas out there to sort through and understand, and hopefully they lead to a good foundation as you're proclaiming, you know, in Christ in that regard. But there's a lot of distrust out there in media and ideas. Again, I know these are esoteric questions. How do you proceed when there is this level of distrust out there in what we're hearing?
Well, I think we have more in common than separates us. Mm. But we've got to engage. Find somebody you disagree with. Go grab a cup of coffee. I think also we have to understand what we believe before we can be persuasive and work to engage with other people. And so one of the recommendations I made to the young people last night, I said, where do you start? I mean, that's the question you're asking. Well, Charlie left us his book recommendations. If you Google Charlie Kirk book recommendations, that's a great place to start. To start reading what the great minds of history have written. And this is truly called the Great Conversation. And every time all of these great minds, as they've written, they've referenced other works and other writings of other people, those are the threads of the Great Conversation. And this is what I've learned through my own renaissance of, you know, reading 50 books a year. Is I'm just following the threads, and it really helps to understand what other people thought and did. And there are we kind of have chronological snobbery in that we think that what's going on today is the most important, the worst, the most extreme. But you go back and study history. I mean, it's been fascinating. I've been reading recently a bunch of biographies on our founding fathers, and although they worked very collaboratively during the Constitutional Convention in 1787, they ended up having deep divisions between them, between Adams and Jefferson and Madison and Hamilton and Aaron Burr, and there are very few new things under the sun, but as Christians, we've got to find ways to build these bridges, and we need to be in dialogue. And we can't, as I said, retreat to these dark corners of social media and somehow confuse dialogue with violence, because they're not the same thing. It's okay to disagree with somebody. We just need to do it respectfully.
Montana Governor Greg Gianforte, I'm up against a break, but I want to ask this question, then I want to move on as well. I've got a couple of phone calls. We'll take those after the break here. This talks about, you know, the power of these kinds of movements. And there are some movements that end up in the wrong place, like Antifa or Black Lives Matter, in my mind. But the power of citizenry, the citizenry, we can feel that. And it's on display here in that regard. How do we, you know, we're running into something new under the sun, in my mind, these professional protesters. And maybe they've been around, but now there's a lot of money behind it. And the root of the problem is some of these well, you can point to mega-rich foreigners who deliberately try to, in my mind, derail American society. And again, it's kind of the same question, but with this dynamic our politics are very theatric nowadays, and a lot of that has to do with social media. Are there methods that we can do as a society? Maybe it's just individually we have to restrain ourselves. But what do you take of where politics is now, with especially the tension in it, and then the fact that it's so theatric that people are being paid to protest, and that's just the theater. It is not good governance.
Well, as I said, there's very few new things under the sun. Back in the early days of this country, political folks would start their own newspapers, and it was propaganda. It was nothing else, just to further their interests. I think it's been magnified by social media, given the extent that messages can be communicated, but. And I said this last night to the group. I mean, be careful of social media. It's addictive. It'll suck you in. You need to build some barriers in your life, and you need to focus on the things that are real, whether that's your friends, family, respectful dialogue. And we can't confuse. Words are not violence. Violence is violence. And we can't somehow allow ourselves to believe that just because someone said something, it gives us a right to to take a violent action in response.
Montana Governor Greg Gianforte with us. Here's something he would know a bit about, having served in Congress previously. Congressman Troy Downing is going to join us a bit later on. We'll continue this conversation with him, government shutdown and you know, responding to political violence, but modernizing our flood mapping. That's a process that's direly needed. That's probably not the right word. But it's continuing. So Troy, we'll have a conversation on that as we continue on here. Again, Governor Greg Gianforte with us here. Greg, I remember, when you served in Congress as well, that was, one of those topics, on the plate in terms of, you know, getting new maps, for our flood control across the state. I don't necessarily want to go into it there right now. I got a couple of phone calls I want to get to, but maybe we'll pick that up at another time. The youth hunting essay contest still to come, and we'll talk about the veteran commendation program. But let's get to a couple of phone calls. They've been standing by. Skip listening in Hamilton. Thanks. You're on the air with Governor Greg Gianforte.
No, thank you, Tom. And good morning, Governor Greg. And it's nice to hear you. Always you're upbeat and you say wonderful things that help us realize how fortunate we are to live in the state of Montana. Personally, I feel really fortunate that you're our leader. And, sir, like you made comments like we have more in common than separation. I thought that was something that we all need to be thinking about, especially politically today. But I wanted to tell you that Charlie Kirk's movement, even in Montana here, is certainly alive and gaining and helping a lot of people, I believe. And this weekend, actually, a young man named Trey, who is in charge of Charlie Kirk's movement, I think, at the University of Montana, Missoula, he'll be speaking at our Lincoln-Reagan dinner this Saturday night at the fairgrounds, which you've been to many times. And also Jim Brown will be speaking there. He's a keynote speaker. But all the youth are going to be sponsored at that Lincoln Reagan dinner, and we hope that we can get a full house there this weekend, so that we can start being more inclusive, and as you say, demonstrate how much more we have in common than separation. But, sir, thanks for coming on and being so upbeat. And I'll tell you what, when your term is over, I'm going to miss you as governor. So I just thought I'd let you know that. That's just between you and me. So have a good day, sir, and thank you a lot.
Thank you for the kind words, Skip.
Skip, I appreciate that. Nancy, a comment on Charlie Kirk as well for Governor Greg Gianforte. Good morning, Nancy.
Hey, good morning, Tom in Montana. Good morning, Governor. I see Charlie Kirk as a prophet. From the very beginning, it was very uncanny. I thought that there was a divine providence here involved, and I'm not saying that he is a reincarnation of Jesus, but I see a lot of similarities in the two men. I look at Jesus through the eyes of a 21st century woman. He was a career man. His job was to spread scripture and to help humanity. And of course, this provoked the ancient Romans, and they crucified him. And it was the same with Charlie. He was a prophet. He was 6'5" tall. He walked the earth here for 33 years only. He spread scripture and goodwill and humanity. And I see both men, too, as protesters, but they were quiet protesters. They both protested things that were wrong that was going on during their times of life. And I'm going to say this. I did watch the rally in Arizona the same day that Charlie was had his funeral and burial, and I saw so much Christian strength. And, you know, Christians make up 60% of our population in the United States, so I have no fear about anybody like this, the Muslims in Dearborn, Michigan, and they're fighting against the idea of America, and, of course, Mam Dami running for mayor there in New York City. He is a supportive Hamas and a radical socialist. But I saw a lot of strength. I feel good about it. I'm sorry that Charlie died. I think he was a beautiful person. And, you know, I think about his kids and his wife. It was just tragic. But I think we're in good hands. the youth are going to pick up where Charlie left off, and God bless America.
Nancy, thank you for those comments, too. Greg, I just, no question there, but people just coming alongside in unity, I should say, there's a lot of value in what we're seeing here.
No one would have picked this course of events for Charlie to be assassinated. I mean, but Scripture promises that all things work together for good for those that love God and are called according to his purposes. And it says clearly all things, even tragic, evil things. And we're going from 3,300 Turning Point chapters across the country to 120,000 chapter applications of command since his death. God is using this for his glory and our good.
Moment of silence is all. And a big yes from this this broadcaster. All right, going to move on. Save 3 minutes here. And thank you for addressing these comments. These are difficult, but also these are a part. This is real. This is real. This is reality. The youth hunting essay contest. I don't know if it's the third, fourth year. Maybe it's more. This has been so much fun. Talk about this.
It totally is. This is hunting's part of our heritage. We want to encourage the next generation to get involved. So we started this program. And I'll tell you, the outdoor sporting goods industry has come alongside us and supported this. Very simple. If you have a son, daughter, grandson, granddaughter, and they're between the ages of 10 and 17, they're eligible. They just need to go harvest something. We're not looking for trophy animals. We're looking for an interesting story and a good picture. So it could be a gopher. It could be a white-tailed doe. It could be a pheasant. It could be a big buck. It doesn't matter. Take a nice picture of the harvest, submit it at youthhunting.mt.gov, and then the young person needs to write a couple of paragraphs, no more than 500 words, about what the experience meant to them. Maybe they used grandpa's rifle. Maybe it was time with mom or dad in the field. The winners of these things tend to highlight the best of our hunting heritage, and we need a good picture. We pick 10 winners every year. They get Kenitrek boots, they get backpacks, they get rifle cases. Murdoch's gives us a gun or a shotgun or a rifle every year. The outfitters give us a fully outfitted hunt. And then we have all the families and the youth hunters to the Capitol in January. We have a big game feed. And it's a wonderful time. We have hundreds of applicants. Again, go harvest something, have a great time in the field, and then submit your story at youthhunting.mt.gov.
I like
it. They have to be in by December 2nd.
And you've got an October 20th deadline for your veteran commendation program. This is very meaningful.
Yeah, and here's what we're looking for. We want to honor veterans. And this, I started this when I was in Congress, continued it as governor.
30 seconds.
We're looking with their veterans who have served their country well and then served their community. You can submit your nomination at recognizeveterans.mt.gov. We'll announce them on Veterans Day.
And if you have a chance, attend one of those veteran commendation programs as well. It's very meaningful. Governor Greg Gianforte, appreciate you, sir. Thank you so much. Be well. Say hello to
Tom.
Susan and family.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
Yeah, God bless.
Thanks for being here. Hope you guys are doing well. Fresh off that Turning Point USA event in Bozeman. It was good to hear from Governor Greg Gianforte as well. And, packed house, had to turn 300 away. As we move on now here from Montana, for Montana, it's Voices of Montana. We're welcoming Congressman Troy Downing for the Eastern District and Montana in his first term. And, of course, has served in Montana as our state auditor previously as well, and joins us now from are you guys in Washington, Troy, taking votes? I know the government's shut down. Good morning, sir. Hope you're doing well.
Good morning. Yes, I'm actually in D.C. We've had a pretty busy schedule today. As I said earlier, we started 5:30 this morning, and so that's 3:30 Montana time, and we're still going strong. I've got a very hardworking staff, and they keep me busy.
Well, and I'm sure if they're here listening right now, they're all shaking their head. Yes, we keep him busy. That's good news, and I really appreciate that. Let's start where we left off with the governor. And, you know, I want to talk about the government shutdown, but let's talk about what we're dealing with, I think, emotionally in a lot of ways, you know, with the assassination of Charlie Kirk. It wasn't just whether right. you're a Charlie Kirk supporter or not. It was it was political violence that has overflowed. And I think we're becoming maybe a little too accepting of it in some ways.
Obviously, everybody's tired of this, you know, hyperbolic, you know, violent rhetoric, you know, and it doesn't affect everybody, but it affects enough to be a problem. And we need to just, you know, tone that down and make sure that we're not doing that. But, you know, just, you know, specifically about Charlie Kirk. I mean, I knew Charlie and I knew him when he was, you know, a young man, you know, starting out. I was very, very impressed with him in his command of the subject and his ability to articulate in a respectful manner, you know, his positions. And one of the things that I was really, really impressed by is he was never afraid to give an alternative point of view, the microphone, and debate it. And I think that was one of his strengths of being able to do that in a respectful manner. And one of the things that I think really created some haters there is there some folks that had a worldview that they did not want to separate from that had no basis in reality. And when he would debate it down to the point where they had to confront reality that conflicted with their worldview, they didn't know what to do other than call him names. And I think that's one of the things that created that opposition. But I'll tell you one thing that's happened here is that assassin has awakened a sleeping giant. I think that you're going to see that movement continue to grow. I haven't seen any recent numbers, but I heard that shortly after the assassination, we saw something like 60,000 applications for new Turning Point USA charters. And obviously, you know, it was a packed house with Turning Point being in Bozeman, I think it was yesterday. Yeah. And, you know, you just see this, you know, huge groundswell of people, because what Charlie did is he gave a lot of these kids a voice. And he gave them tools to actually debate and consider things, which is incredibly powerful. And a lot of them, you know, especially kids who are going through the university systems, they had a lot of pressure to go a different political line than they actually believed in or what they grew up with. He gave them the ability to actually be strong in their convictions and be able to talk about that and find people that had the same ideas. And I think that just, you know, it just grew like crazy. And what happened with this assassination is, like, again, I'm going to say, awaken a sleeping giant. I think that we're going to see that continue to grow, that message continue to grow. And you're going to start to see young people who are comfortable, who do not buy into, you know, a leftist agenda that a lot of them are being fed in the university system. So I'm really excited about that. And, you know, one other thing, and I know I've been talking in a monolith here, but one other thing that I think is important to note and was really, really impressed me is Charlie was incredibly comfortable and strong in his faith and did not hide that at all. It was upfront and obvious. And I really admire that, because a lot of young men in his situation wouldn't be able to be so vocal about that in just random large audiences. And I think that was an incredible asset that he had. And I think that we've seen, you know, somewhat of a revival in kids understanding that, you know, faith is good. And I really appreciate that message that he brought. And I'm excited that, you know, but obviously we've lost Charlie, unfortunately, and, you know, horribly sad. I do take comfort that, you know, he was strong in his faith and he's with his creator now. And has created, you know, a movement that is going to help so many more people in this country, so many more young Americans, and I love that legacy.
Yeah, I mean, he planted that seed and he watered it, and now it's going to be up to others to caretake, so to speak, of that program. How do you foster good public engagement like this, and make it peaceful? You know, and you talk about ideas. We're emotional. Humans are emotional. And you want to have some of that emotion. You want to have some of that passion, you know, to drive you to good solutions.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think that the Charlie in particular, I'm hoping that folks, you know, continue to watch and study his techniques and tactics, because what he did was not to ridicule, or there were no ad hominem attacks. it was just common sense. And he would bring you down through this reductive process of debate that got you to a reality without, you know, saying that you're, you know, without throwing those attacks out there. And I think the more of that we have, the more respectful debate. You know, I've said this my whole life in my, you know, private, you know, career, my political career, is you have to be able to listen and consider what's being said. You have to be respectful in doing that, but you don't promise you're going to agree. And I mean, it's an unreasonable assumption to think that everybody's going to agree. We just don't. Even people that are very similar are going to find disagreements, but you can do that in a respectful manner. And we need to get back to that, because a lot of this, you know, just hyperbolic rhetoric is inciting, you know, the weaker, you know, parts of the, of society to go do acts of violence. And we need to be strong against that. And I'm hoping as this movement grows that people really stick to that legacy of who Charlie was, and somebody that could debate without having to, you know, resort to name calling and ad hominem attacks.
Montana's Troy Downing with us, our Eastern District Congressman, downing.house.gov for more information on and then services as well. We'll get on to the Powder River Basin bill. It's a coal bill. We'll get on to map modernizing here in just a little bit. I want to talk about this government shutdown. You had a clean continuing resolution from what I have seen about it and read it. And, I mean, people can go and access the document. There's a lot of pushback from liberals in Congress to pile onto that. In fact, when we've covered it here, I want your take on this. I mean, talk about this clean CR, talk about what the Democrats are trying to add to this. And then maybe what's the path forward?
Well, Tom, this is really, really simple. Yeah. Is the fringe of the Democrat Party have been running the narrative for the Democrats. And they are trying to take what should be a very simple policy position of give us these extra 7 weeks so that we can continue working on regular order appropriations bills. And they're throwing politics into it, and they're throwing these red herring at it, trying to make it about something other than what it is, because they're worried that they're not going to get their way. And if you look at what's happening, this is obviously happening in the Senate. And just for your listeners who may not understand this, because a lot of folks will throw stuff out there like you have the, you know, House, and you have the Senate, and you have the White House, you should be able to get anything through. But it's simply not true. We need 60 votes in the Senate for it to become law, and we only have 53 Republicans. And we've slowly had some Democrats move to keeping the voting to keep the government open. But the bulk of them, really run by Chuck Schumer, is completely political in nature. And I think what's happened here is Chuck Schumer is afraid for his political future, because he was lambasted by his base when he agreed to a CR earlier this year. And so he's worried that he's not going to survive a primary challenge, the buzz around the Hill is that it's going to be from AOC if he does not fight the Trump, you know, agenda and what the Republicans are trying to do. But the reality of it is, just to be really clear, is we have a clean CR, meaning it's bipartisan. There's no politics in it. It's just continue our current spending for 7 weeks so that we can get through these final appropriations bills that have already come out of the House, already come out of the Senate. They're just in conference committee right now to reconcile these two separate bills and get it through. And the American people want us to get back to regular order. And one thing I just want to make sure that your listeners understand is that a lot of the issues that they bring up are valid issues to discuss, but they need to be discussed in committee. They need to be debated. They need to have, you know, witnesses and people asking, you know, the questions to get to, you know, to refine the policy down to something that makes sense and reject bad policy and make sure that we're pushing good policy. That doesn't happen by holding the American people hostage, by holding pay from our service members, by holding pay from our border patrol, by stopping FEMA from issuing, you know, national flood insurance programs to developers trying to, you know, sell product. This is holding the American people hostage by throwing politics into what should be a very simple policy position that they've already voted for and accepted over and over and over. And the only explanation is that Chuck Schumer is afraid of primarying a bartender.
You know, and I think the mainstream misleading, is taking that veil off a little bit as I see this, because it is pretty obvious what's going on here. And so they have to be a little more genuine about it. I'm going to take a break because I want to get to these other topics. I think they're important too. The Powder River Basin coal bill, that is actually being heard right now, right?
Yes, it is. Actually, I'm watching the votes as we speak.
All right. All right. Back live with Montana's Troy Downing, Eastern District Congressman, downing.house.gov. For more information, we're going to move on to a couple of topics here. Chief Justice of the Montana Supreme Court, Corey Swanson, is going to be in studio tomorrow. This is rather unique and an opportunity to talk about our court system and jurisprudence and what's good and what's not in this country as well. So, that's tomorrow. Let's finish up with Congressman Troy Downing. Troy, I have Nancy and Roundup on the line here. Nancy, I'm just going to go and ask this question because we're going to run out of time. But she wants to talk about, because she agrees, she lives in a flood zone. And one of the things that you have introduced is a bill to modernize our flood mapping. I think that's needed in Montana, and Nancy would agree with that. Talk about that, and then let's get on to the Powder River Basin bill.
Yeah, just really briefly, obviously the National Flood Insurance Program is an important tool that we have out there. It needs to be, there's a lot of issues with it. It needs to be revised. It needs to be modernized. And one of the parts of this is when they do the periodic 100-year flood mapping. And so my bill is modernizing that. So it's going to increase the granularity so that you have, you know, a finer data points. It's going to start including geographic anomalies as well as structures. And the most important thing is it's going to make that data available to the public. So if you're a developer or a landowner, you can understand, you know, what data is being used to draw this next map. And, you know, you can comment or plan accordingly. So I think this is a well-needed modernization that that is going to help a lot of folks in Montana navigate this the next time FEMA is doing their flood mapping.
And it's bipartisan. Do you how do you feel about that support?
Well, you know, here's the thing. It's not everything is partisan. I mean, we get a lot of good work done that is not hyper-partisan, and I think that's all stuff that we should endeavor to do. But there's still partisan, you know, junk that gets out there. Like, you know, we were just talking about the shutdown. One of the things that the, you know, Democrats in the Senate are trying to do is undo very important provisions in the One Big Beautiful Bill. And one part that really gets me is they want to undo that $50 billion that we've appropriated for supporting rural health care. I mean, if we get rid of that, I mean, that'd be devastating. And so the fact that that's something that they're holding the American people hostage over, I think is completely unsavory.
Just bad governance in my mind. Powder River Basin, we got about a minute, less than a minute and a half on this one. Please go.
Right. Well, hey, I'm really happy. I'm actually watching because we passed this in the House, and this is basically undoing the RMPA for the Miles City Field Office that Biden put there to restrict being able to mine coal in the Powder River Basin. And so that passed the House. And obviously Senator Daines is carrying that in the Senate. And I'm actually looking at the screen right now where it is 34 yeas to 30 nays. So I'm pretty confident this is going to pass in the Senate and it'll get to President Trump's desk. And I'm, you know, 100% confident that President Trump will sign this into law, and it will continue to do what we need to do as a nation and support energy dominance to make sure that energy continues to pay salaries, to put money into our state coffers, and to make sure that energy is affordable and reliable. And so I'm really happy that we're getting this through and undoing some just horrible policy that the Biden administration threw in here. And we just, this is a HJ Resolution 104, which is just Congress rejecting this policy that the Biden administration threw in there.
I appreciate your work, Troy, and appreciate you coming on and giving us answers about some of these things here too. And how you do your job, you know, thanks. It's a lot of confidence there. I've got 15 seconds. You want to say goodbye?
I do. And if anything we can help you with, our constituent services, I think, are unmatched. Just go to downing.house.gov, phone number at the bottom.
Good job, Troy. Be well. Okay. Be safe,
Thank you.
Too. Thanks for joining us for the podcast, and join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.